You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps away from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn. On the program today, on the release of the CIA torture report from the Senate Intelligence Committee, Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net. Also on the program, Rebecca Gordon, teacher of philosophy, University of San Francisco, UC San Francisco, author of Mainstreaming Torture, Ethical Approaches in the Post-9/11 United States. Also on the program today, Ted Cruz's Sophie's Choice moment. And the head of Freedom Industries, you remember that guy? The guy who was making sure people in, what is it, Virginia, could smell freedom?
West Virginia.
West Virginia, smell freedom as it trickled through their drinking water. He is being brought up on charges. Meanwhile, those Tea Partiers wearing their tri-cornered hats, so worried about the idea of taxation without representation, not so worried about reversing a referendum that decriminalized marijuana in Washington, as they have basically shut all that down. And fear not, black folk. White folks are absolutely convinced that the police treat you fairly. Hopefully that'll be some measure of solace. All that and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member at majority.fm or justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee. Use the coupon code majority or go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the Amazon link, and buy your Amazon crap. If you buy crap from Amazon, you buy it through there, we get a kickback. But I mentioned this last week. Myla desperately wants to get me a Hanukkah present. I obviously don't want the kid to spend too much because it really ultimately just comes from me. She has yet to get her own job. I've been encouraging her to do so. But at age 9, you know, these pesky child labor laws, which we all know are an imposition and would be utterly unnecessary but for the statists that we have who want to control our children. Let the free market decide is what I say. But because we don't live in that libertarian paradise, I end up having to give Myla money to get me a present. It's still nice that she's getting me a present. And I found the perfect present for her to get me. One that's not going to cost too much, but one that I'm actually going to enjoy. Like, you know, as opposed to, I don't know, a Nicki Minaj album or whatever it is. I don't know what she would buy me on, left to her totally her own devices. Now, this is not a present that you would necessarily, I don't know, it never I never contemplated it until I got one of these Harrys.com razors because, frankly, we were doing an ad for them, I don't know, 6 months ago. And they have a deal right now where if you use Majority Report Holiday as the coupon code and you go to Harrys.com, HARRYS.com, you can get the Winter Winston set. It's $30, but then you get $5 off with the coupon code. It's got a very nice, like substantial feeling chrome razor, three high quality blades, and you get your choice of the foaming or the shave gel. Or I should say the foaming the foaming cream. I don't know how you say it. One foams, one's gel. You put both of them on your face, not simultaneously. It's an either-or situation, and you shave with it. I go with the gel. It's smaller. It fits in my tiny little cabinet. But check it out. It's a great razor. You've heard me talk about them before. When I shave, which I try and do as infrequently as possible, I like to get a good shave. And I cannot stand going to whatever it is, Near Guard or Dwayne Reed or whatever, and buying a razor that I got to spend 45 minutes and take out a power drill to open up one of those huge plastic boxes they put it in. This, they just mail it to you, comes right to your door. It suits everything that I like, which involves a lot of laziness and also a razor that's actually going to do a good job. So check it out, Harrys.com. Use the coupon code MajorityReportHoliday. Get $5 off the Winter Winston set. It's a nice gift. All right, we're going to be right back with Marcy Wheeler. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. The blogger from the Uber blog, emptywheel.net, Marcy Wheeler. Hello, Marcy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Now, I assume most of our audience knows that if they ever want to know about things like national security state and know on an incredibly granular level that they should be reading your blog. And you've expanded it, actually. You got some other writers there, BMAZ, but others that you're adding that are fantastic on other topics as well. So I hope people are there. I wanted to get your first impression from the Senate CIA torture report. First off, let me just ask this, because I really don't know if there's anybody more knowledgeable about this stuff in the country. Was there anything in there that surprised you? Or that you didn't know? Let's put it that way.
I mean, there were details I didn't know. And that's, I think, what the first impression of this is meant to be. When you hear them, when you see them describing the CIA anally feeding men for no medical reason, that's pretty shocking. They did that to 5 guys.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that. I mean, it's stuff like, and there were details like I've long wanted to know what Jose Rodriguez deleted from his account of his briefing of Nancy Pelosi on torture. And we know it's that either she or Porter Goff said, hey, wait a second, this is illegal. So he deleted that and then destroyed the torture tape. So little details like that. But those are, as you said, really weedy, and most people don't need to know that level of detail.
So we know that it was either Nancy Pelosi or Porter Goss who had basically said to Rodriguez, and this again, this is a guy who's now who has not been fired from the CIA, but he has been promoted since this episode, told that this program was illegal, and then he went off and destroyed the tapes. What they
basically said is, in other countries, this is going to be illegal in other countries, but they raised questions of law about the conduct that CIA said it was going to use in the future. They had already used it in Abu Zubaydah. And originally, that was included in the summary of their briefing of Pelosi and Goss, and then they decided that maybe they should take it out. And Rodriguez said, short but sweet, took that out.
Wow. All right. So let me also start with this. Isn't it? It seems to me. I mean, the mandate of the report was to look only at the CIA actions, right? There seems to me to be some stuff that I have trouble reconciling, and you can help explain it to me. One is that on one hand, the report claims that the CIA was lying to policymakers. Does the report say that it was lying to the Bush administration? Because it seems to me at one point, I can't remember exactly where it is, but I think it was somebody got a call at the National Security. I guess it was Bybee got a call from folks at the CIA in 2003 after Bush gave a speech saying, hey, we don't torture, we would never do that. And the CIA called the National Security Office and said, hey, what's going on here? Are we being left out to hang out to dry? I mean, isn't that indication that the administration knew what was going on?
Yeah, and that incident actually, it refers to a 2003 speech, and actually had been reported in the Washington Post, I think in 2008. There were a couple of times where the CIA demanded and got more cover from the White House. That point in June 2003, after President Bush in a speech said, hey, not only did he say we don't torture, but he also said we bring those who torture to prosecution. And that's when the CIA started freaking out.
It was John Rizzo, who was the CIA's deputy general counsel, who called John Bellinger, the legal advisor to the National Security Council, to say, hey, are we in trouble here?
Right. But then what happened? On July 29th, 2003, so about a month later, the CIA briefed Bellinger and a bunch of other people, not Bush, but Vice President Cheney was there, and said, here's all the great things we've gotten from torture, including, all of these terrorist plots Khalid Sheikh Mohammed helped us break. And that's the gist of a lot of the lies the CIA told both to Congress and to the White House. They said, we got X, Y, and Z from torture. And what the report does is trace through and go, no, actually that came from the foreign government that was holding Majid Khan or al-Nashiri or whatever before he got turned over to the CIA that elicited that information. Or that was the FBI that was interrogating Abu Zubaydah before the CIA kicked them out. So it's details like that where the CIA, they're basically the cheat in high school who is claiming credit for passing the test when they were looking over your shoulder the entire time. That's sort of what the CIA was doing with their torture program. Only people were being subjected to brutal interrogation in the process. There are another series of lies. I mean, the CIA lied about who they briefed when. The CIA lied to DOJ about what the torture they had either already done or were going to do constituted. The CIA tried to, and this one actually doesn't show up in the report as much as it should. It probably is in the classified section. But the CIA, having done a bunch of things that were not approved by DOJ, basically went to John Yoo and got him to freelance his own mini opinion so that they could claim to have authority to basically stick people in freezing water, which they love to do and got somebody killed in Afghanistan. And that's the kind of stuff CIA was pulling along the way. So yeah, they lied to everyone. And I think it is, the biggest or one of the big problems with the report is that, and Mark Udall just got off the floor of the Senate, basically making this case. President Obama protected the office of the presidency and his predecessors to a great extent. And I argue that one reason he did so is because he is relying and has been relying on precisely the same presidential authorization for his drone strikes that Bush relied on for torture.
This is the gloves come off memorandum of notification.
Yeah. So going back to September 17th, 2001, For whatever reason, Obama didn't decide to start fresh with the war on terror. He just used Bush's, you know, broad authorization for the CIA to engage in a bunch of stuff, including torture and drone strikes. And if Obama sets the precedent, the presidents can have their actions, the actions that they authorized, investigated. Then, you know, President Ted Cruz can do it to him after he's done,
right?
So he's not going to do that. And so the CIA withheld 9,000 documents from the Senate, basically citing White House equities without – no one forced the White House to invoke executive privilege, which Dianne Feinstein could have and probably should have done, to make it clear that this is about Obama's cover-up. But as a result of that, I mean, I can point to some places in this report where I know David Addington is or where I know Dick Cheney is. There's a number of places like that, and I'm only halfway through my close reading of it. And that's a legitimate problem because all of these people who were ordered by Dick Cheney to go torture have been stuck out there, and Dick Cheney is not out there with them, which is why Cheney is taking to the TV and saying lots of nice stuff because he realizes – you know, if they don't get some protection, they're going to come after him and say, well, Dick Cheney made us do it all, and then the whole thing will start to collapse. But that's one of the problems is President Obama is protecting President Bush and to a much greater extent Vice President Cheney. And because of that, there are these gaping holes where Dick Cheney should be.
And when we talk about the CIA coming back and lying about the efficacy of their work, is that are they – And I don't know if there's anything in the report that would indicate that, but let me get your sense. Are they doing that because Cheney is basically saying, like, look, when you guys come and report to us, I want to hear good things?
Partly. And there are moments in the report where CIA officers, CIA's managers are saying, you know, unless we make this look good, then we're going to lose a budget. We're going to lose our budget. So, you know, there's some of that kind of institutional.
Not we're going to go to jail. We're going to lose our budget.
Right. Exactly. But I did a post before the report came out the other day, and I think it still holds. The Senate Armed Services Committee report, which Carl Levin released in 2009, and which, by the way, was not redacted anywhere near as heavily as this CIA report, which, you know, so the secrecy is getting worse under the most transparent administration ever. But in that report, it makes it clear that it was not just CIA, it was also DOD that was asking for this. But these agencies that were working with Dick Cheney to institute a torture program, they weren't looking for interrogation per se. They were looking for what's called exploitation, which is a term of art that includes, that does include interrogation, but it also includes getting people to spy for you. As we know, a number of people who were put through the torture programs, both DODs and CIAs, did do, and also to create propaganda. And so one question that I think more people should be asking, because we know it happened. I mean, so we sent even Sheikh al-Libi, a Libyan, who we captured in Afghanistan, we sent him to be tortured at our behest in Egypt by Omar Suleiman, who is a close intelligence partner of us. And under torture, even Sheikh al-Libi said Al-Qaeda and Iraq have ties. They work on chemical weapons together. And that's what was used to get us into Iraq.
Right.
That tortured lie. And there are a number of other tortured lies. You know, we know, for example, that Vice President Cheney was planning on, wanted to waterboard this Iraqi intelligence guy that he thought would be able to claim
weapons
that Iraq and Al-Qaeda had ties. So you know, there is very good reason, and you're going to have Jonathan Landy on, I think, right?
No,
that's Scott. But, I mean, I think there's very good reason to believe that some of this was about getting the stories that Dick Cheney wanted. And it may be that he believed it, or it may be that he felt like he needed some casus belli to go into Iraq. Another thing that we know some of these same detainees were asked to do was claim that Osama bin Laden had nukes when they knew that wasn't true either. And then they recanted. And so those themes, the ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and that Osama bin Laden had nukes or some other kind of, there's an extended anecdote about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed claiming these people had an anthrax program. And so those things, I think, raise a real question and should get people, you know, when Dick Cheney says this program was effective, somebody on TV needs to turn to him and say, you mean it was effective in getting us into Iraq for no reason?
Right.
Because
I mean,
that
that's...
is what it was effective in doing. And that's what, frankly, all of the torture programs that we reverse engineered to use as our torture program were designed to do. They were designed for propaganda. They weren't designed for getting intelligence.
Let me just make this clear to people, is that it is widely known that you cannot get good intel information generally from torture, and that really torture is about getting false confessions, right? That's why you see it in dictatorial regimes and where you want the kangaroo courts. And in this instance, it's sort of a fascinating hybrid, isn't it? Because we get this information so that we can then put it into – we're basically laundering false information on some level by torturing people so that we can get it into the mainstream. It's no different in some ways than Dick Cheney making sure that Judith Miller is leaked something and then goes and cites Judith Miller on Meet the Press. It's all part of that larger picture.
And another thing that this report shows is that the CIA was going to – the New York Times again, and getting them to say, oh, the program was really effective and here's the stuff we got from Abu Zubaydah. But we know that, in fact, what we were getting from Abu Zubaydah was instead the scares that let the government kind of ramp up these counterterrorism policies. And I want to be really cautious here. Like, I don't know what's inside Dick Cheney's head, and I'm kind of scared to go there. I suspect there are a lot of people in the middle that just simply believed that Al-Qaeda in Iraq had some tie, or that just simply believed that the scariest thing was Osama bin Laden with a nuclear bomb, and therefore they kept asking about it. And so it kind of was a self-reinforcing bubble, and that's part of the problem with bubbles. And then there are people, you know, the people who decided they were going to anally feed these men, they're just plain
sick. They're sick.
Crazy sick.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. And I think that's what happens to torturers is they, you know, and there are a number of people who've been involved in the interrogation program who in the last couple of days have said, you know, torture is as much as about what it does to the torturer as it is to the tortured person. I think Maher Arar, who we sent to be tortured by Bashar al-Assad, said that.
Right. This is a Canadian citizen. Is that right? You know, on some level, the story, at least concurrently back in, you know, in 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, that we were talking about was basically the administration, and then, you know, it filtering down was just basically like, well, as you call it, it's the gloves come off a memorandum that basically says, you do what you got to do. You just get me X, Y, or Z. And that's that desire for X, Y, or Z. I guess what we're saying is we don't really know what that desire was founded, like get me lies that will get me into Iraq or get me what I think is the truth that will get me into Iraq. But let's do it, you know, do it any way you can, which, of course, increases the odds that it's going to come there because, you know, is you can torture people into giving you the information you want, I guess, at that point. So what happens from here? Nothing?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, here's the other thing that's going on is, you know, I commend Dianne Feinstein for getting this report out. I really do. And I commend her staffers all the more so because they went through hell to make this happen. But one of the problems, and one of the problems I have with this report, and one of the areas where I'm actually sympathetic with the torturers, is that this report should be taken as a lesson in the failures of our oversight of CIA. It should be taken. I mean, that should be the primary lesson we take away, because it's not just torture. This is true of, it's true of the drone strikes. It's true of, you know, there was that report recently that showed that when CIA pays rebels to fight its wars for them, it almost always fails. It failed in Libya. I think most of the people who supported the Libya intervention now are just appalled at what has happened. It is failing in Syria. And so, and again, that's largely the same structure. And we keep failing. We keep making colossal mistakes in what are called covert ops. And it keeps getting America sucked deeper and deeper into this morass, both of moral failure, but also just danger in the Middle East. And that's, the lesson needs to be stop. The lesson needs to be all of these programs. It's not, you know, like the Republicans want it to be, we should be torturing rather than drone striking. And the Democrats want it to be, we should be drone striking rather than torturing. But the answer should be, we need to find other solutions, because both torture and drone strikes have failed.
I mean, so in a perfect world, do we just, we shut down the CIA, or is it that the real people who need to read this report are the Senate intelligence and the House intelligence committees, and they need to say, like, oh, this is more than anything else, this is our failure, this is why we the fact that we exist is sort of a proof that there's a problem, and there's always sort of an inherent problem with a place like, you know, an entity like the CIA and perhaps any other people come in. And this really is a condemnation of us.
Well, it's not entirely. I mean, I don't want to let Congress off too easily. And I think that, you know, one of the problems with drones that's even worse than with torture, both are really driven by contractors. But General Dynamics is giving campaign funds to most of the people in the Intelligence Committee. So that makes it harder to stop, because, you know, Mitchell and Justin, as far as we know, weren't also, you know, dumping a lot of money back into the Intelligence Committee.
They were.
But
I'm asking. I did you say?
Oh,
they,
no, we
they
don't know that
okay.
they are.
Let me just tell people.
Whereas we know that General Dynamics pays a ton of money into politics.
Let me just tell people who they are. Those are two individuals who set up a company basically to consult with the CIA on how to sort of set up these torture programs. They were supposed to get $180 million. When their contract was canceled, they only gotten 80 of it. But that in and of itself is just it's just shocking. I mean.
And we're still paying. I mean, you know, they've got an indemnification contract, which I don't blame them for. But, you know, we paid $1 million after they were done contracting for us. And we paid them $500,000 for counter surveillance. We paid them like $100 million. I mean, we paid them $1 million for legal services, a chunk of which was for when they testified before Senator Levin's committee back in 2008. So, yeah, we're still paying them.
Unbelievable.
I think that the contract goes through like 2022 or something like that.
So what's the best that's going to come out of this, if anything? I know you got to go and you got another interview to do, but what's the best? I mean, how do we sum this up at this point anyways?
You know, I just think people need to start demanding that the CIA, to the extent that it still exists, engages in humans. Engages in information collection and not these grand paramilitary torture contract driven other plans, because they're not built for it. They don't have the management structure for it. They're not good at it. There's not enough oversight for it. And it tends to really backfire.
And do you think Brennan would make those changes or no?
No. Right. Mark Udall just called for his resignation, but that's not going to happen either.
Marcy Wheeler, emptywheel.net. Folks should check it out. I suspect we're going to want to talk to you more about this in the coming weeks. But thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
All right, folks. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, I pre-recorded this interview this morning. And I think for the most part covers slightly different terrain with Rebecca Gordon. It really is stunning and remind you that, you know, I don't think there is a huge public outcry over this. I mean, perhaps there will be, but For the most part, no. And that's one of the biggest reasons why we're not going to get any type of accountability, and more disturbingly, any type of precedent set to discourage this stuff in the future. I mean, it hasn't discouraged the drone war. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Rebecca Gordon. We are back on the Majority Report. On the phone with me is Rebecca Gordon. She teaches philosophy at the University of San Francisco. She is the author of Mainstreaming Torture, Ethical Approaches in the Post-9/11 United States. You can get more information at mainstreamingtorture.org. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to do it.
All right. So, and now I know that we're pre-taping this interview shortly after. You're going to be talking, you're going to be, I believe, on the radio or with the UN Special Rapporteur on Counterterrorism and Human Rights. Is that right? Or?
Almost. I'm going to be doing a webcast with Juan Mendez, who is actually the Special Rapporteur on Torture for the United Nations.
And, well, so I should say that Ben Emmerson, the Special Rapporteur on Counterterrorism and Human Rights, has said that there must be some measure of accountability here. There must be prosecutions, regardless of whether or not the – as outlined in the report from the Senate, regardless of whether or not the CIA was or was not ordered to engage in this torture. Give me a sense of – is this one of the potential impacts we're going to see from this report, or is this basically it? Does it just fade away?
Well, I would like it to be one of the potential impacts. I was impressed to see that the BBC and some other major news outlets actually picked up that demand for prosecution, because it's something that is often mentioned in more progressive or even leftist circles, but you don't usually hear it coming from official sources like the United Nations. Prosecution is not only crucial to preventing this kind of thing from happening again, but it's also a requirement, a duty that the United States has under the UN Convention Against Torture. We signed that convention in 1994, and one of the articles in it says that every state that signs it will prosecute any cases of torture that happen by their citizens or on their territory or territory under their control. So we absolutely have a legal requirement to prosecute.
And we also have, is it the 96, we have federal statute as well. Is that right?
Yes. The federal statute is a little complicated because, so not to get too technical, but when any state signed the convention, the next thing we were supposed to do is pass what's called enabling legislation. In other words, laws at the national level that put the convention into effect in that country. The United States said, well, we already have laws against torture in the United States because it's illegal to assault someone or battery is illegal and we have a constitution. So the law that we pass is going to make it illegal to do torture outside of the United States. So the law that was passed in 96 only covers actions that happen outside the United States. Now that covers a lot of what the CIA did. So in that sense, it's covered, but the question is, does it cover, for example, Guantanamo, which is, yes, outside the United States, but under U.S. control? In any case, the U.S. has never done what the U.N. wants it to do and asked it to do again in its most recent report, which is pass a law at the federal level making torture illegal.
And so where is there any hope from your perspective in terms of any type of accountability? And then, and break that down for me, both mm-hmm. in terms of legal accountability, which I think
is... But also moral accountability.
But also some type of moral accountability, because we still have polls in this country which show that Americans in certain circumstances, say torture's okay.
Not only that, in fact, the willingness of Americans to do torture increased during the whole length of the so-called war on terror. So the further we got away from the attacks of September 11th, the more willing people actually were in some circumstances to torture somebody. So it's
what do you think accounts for that? I mean, because I think
we've gotten used to it. I think it's been normalized. I think the gradual drip, drip, drip of revelations has actually made torture more normal and more acceptable and more mainstream, if you will, than it was on September 11th, there really was a consensus against it in this country.
How did that process happen? I mean, is it because there's this drip drip and there's no accountability? In other words, it almost functions like a strain of
right. It's like an inoculation, a vaccine.
Right.
And this has been called by a theologian named William Kavanaugh, it's been called the striptease of power. And the idea is sort of, now you see it, now you don't. You see these terrible pictures from Abu Ghraib, and then they sort of sink like a stone. One or two very low-level people are held accountable. Anthony Taguba publishes a report, and then the whole thing disappears. You hear a little bit about what's happened at Guantanamo. You see stories in the New York Times about stress and duress in Afghanistan, and then it disappears again. And that gradual set of revelations actually does exactly what you say. It inoculates us. I also think that the entertainment media has a little bit of blame to bear here. You know, it was an accident that 24 happened to be scheduled for release in the fall right after September 11th. But the reality is that show and the idea that that torture is something one lone heroic operative does in moments of desperation has really seared itself into the minds of the people who have watched it. And it's a complete fabrication of what torture really is, which is an ongoing institutionalized practice that has infrastructure, trained operatives. It has its own internal values. It has rituals of initiation, ways that people are brought into it. But we've been taught that it's something heroic individuals, whether they are foreign operatives or maybe they're police in your local police station,
right,
are going to do to make sure that that terrible perp doesn't lawyer up.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that once you begin to minimize, I mean, and this is all it functions like you have a bacterial infection, you take antibiotics, but you don't take enough. So it's almost
right.
It basically allows the bacterial infection to sort of mutate and grow and become stronger, like some type of super bug. And I mean, it seems like there's really only two ways you go with this, right? You completely hide the fact that torture existed, and nobody ever reported it, so that mm-hmm. we could keep it as something that you couldn't even talk about in public without there being serious consequences. Or you actually provide the serious consequences. So
right.
In some respects, this let's not go back, let's turn the page and look forward is far more damaging than having never known about it.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. But, you know, I don't think that although the CIA fought the release of the report tooth and nail, and I frankly don't think that the rest of the executive branch was too thrilled about it either, the reality is that part of the work that torture and the knowledge of torture did in this country is it reminded people that we need to be terrified all the time. Because if our government, a good government, a government that's a leader in human rights in the world, is doing such terrible things, these must be really terrible people, and we must be in really terrible danger. So I don't think that the program would have been as effective in the sense of keeping everybody on board with the so-called war on terror if it had remained a secret. But you're right. Now that it's out, we have superbugs. We have superbugs who are George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, people who have not and may not ever suffer any kind of condemnation, whether moral or legal. Now, there are a couple of possibilities here. One thing we should remember is that we need to take the long game. It's late, but the generals in Argentina are on trial right now. Pinochet was finally brought to trial right before he died, but it did happen. And the president of Uruguay, who was tortured for 12 years, is now actively working against torture and receiving people from Guantanamo who don't have anywhere else to go. So in the long run, it doesn't work. In the long run, there is a backlash. But there's another option.
Well, let me qualify that.
Yeah.
In the long run, if you've committed these atrocities and you are not powerful enough to quash investigations, let's say, that
right
are taking place in Spain.
Exactly.
And, you know, there was a judge who was pursuing this stuff in Spain. That man is no
yes
longer a judge.
That's true. Although he did a lot of good before he stopped being a judge. But you're right. And all of the people who call this stuff out are taking terrible risks. Anthony Taguba, who wrote the report about Abu Ghraib, ended up losing his military career. You're right, but there are risks. And this is a time for heroism. People have to be brave about this. I also think that we could be looking for some kind of hearings to be held in Congress. If, for example, John McCain, who, you know, with whom I don't agree about a lot of things, but who went out front yesterday and, you know, gave a very good speech about what the CIA did was torture and it's wrong. If we could have sort of a reprise of the church hearings from 1975, are you familiar with those?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, so back in 1975, it became apparent that the CIA had actually been doing black ops inside the United States, and people were pretty outraged, and a whole series of hearings were held, and the result was that the CIA was, for some years, kind of hamstrung in what it could do. Now, it's true there were no prosecutions that came out of it, but I think that at least if we could have moral condemnation and a kind of national consensus that comes out of those kinds of hearings, and that's what happened in 75 with the church hearings, if we could have a national consensus that this was wrong and the people who were in charge of it did something terrible, that would be progress. It wouldn't be full accountability, but it would be at least an official level, an official imprimatur on
that something
that
was wrong.
This was wrong.
Yeah,
but this was wrong.
And I am very skeptical. I think we may hear another couple of things out of McCain, but frankly, I'm not convinced we're going to hear much more. What it raises also what I find most interesting about Anthony Romero, the head mm-hmm. of the ACLU's op-ed the other day, saying that we should pardon all involved. He's getting a lot of criticism from people who are saying that lets people off the hook. But the thing that is interesting to me is that once you have that debate, if two people debate as to whether or not there should be a pardon, it seems to me both people are acknowledging
that
a crime has been committed.
Yes.
And to that extent, from a political perspective, maybe it's not maybe the ACLU is not the best voice for something like that. But that seems to me to be at least moving down that road where we acknowledge, hey, the law was broken. This stuff is wrong. You need a pardon if you're going to be free.
Yes. I thought it was a very imaginative move. And I agree that perhaps the ACLU isn't going to be able to carry that as well as some other maybe more mainstream organization. But on the other hand, I consider the ACLU fairly mainstream, and I think they do really good and important work.
Oh, no, my feeling was that the ACLU should not place themselves in a position of I see that as a bit of a capitulation. I wasn't suggesting that they weren't mainstream enough to carry the message, but
right.
rather it may hurt their brand, frankly.
Right. Exactly.
Because
I think that's right. I think that they're getting a lot of flack, but I think that he has actually started a conversation that I'm not quite sure how else we could have gotten it started.
I
about
agree.
The fact that crimes actually have been committed and whether or not the idea is actually taken up. the very fact of having put it out there, I think, was actually pretty smart.
Yes. Like I say, if two people are debating whether or not there should be a pardon, they are necessarily accepting the premise that a crime has been committed.
Exactly.
And that, I think, is crucial. So where do we go from here? I mean, assuming we're not going to have another round of church hearings, which I don't believe that we will, only because of the culpability. I mean, look, John Brennan, who's not exactly in the center of this, of what went on, certainly, you know, had a front row seat in terms of the torture and arguably maybe a closer one.
And in fact, yesterday his statement was, hey, it worked.
Right. I mean, yes, the CIA is going to continue to do that. So where else could this come from? I mean, where else? How do we not get worse from here?
I think that's a really important question, and I wish I could tell you that I have all the answers to that. But I think that part of the job of people in the media is to keep the question live as much as we can. And that means more imaginative interventions like what Anthony Romero did, and more, you know, I've spent many, many years telling people, call Congress, write letters to Congress. I did it during the Contra War. I've done it over and over. And the truth is, I know that those things, when they have an effect, they happen very slowly. There are organizations that are doing work on Capitol Hill in the background that are doing lobbying, that are working with members of Congress who might be, you know, encouraged to take some kind of action. But, you know, there are a couple of demands that we could make. One is to pass the federal law outlawing torture. And that's a possibility that could come out of this. John McCain's not going to hold hearings, but he might be persuaded to pass, you know, to carry a law that just makes torture
right,
illegal.
Or at least to offer a bill.
Or offer a bill, even offer a bill, which causes, you know, some conversation. And, you know, he's very well placed to do it because he's a Republican. We've got a Republican Congress coming in. So that's one thing that I think is that really could be done. Another thing we could do is we could look at torture in another place where it's hidden in plain sight and where the numbers involved are actually much, much larger than the war on terror, and that's in the prisons here in the United States. You know, we've got somewhere between 50 and 80,000 people in solitary confinement in this country, and we now know that within 2 weeks, people begin to experience psychosis. They get hallucinations. They become deeply paranoid. They hear voices. There are people in my state, California, who have been in solitary for almost 3 decades.
Wow.
And that's not the only form of torture that goes on in an institutionalized, regular way in prison. The other one is rape and sexual abuse, which is so rampant that many reports have been written by Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, but it's so rampant that it's a plot device on your average evening entertainment.
I want to go back. I mean, I think one other thing that, you know, in a sort of a more fantastical, in a parallel universe, we would scrap the CIA, and that would
provide – that would be a good move.
It would be much harder for people in the future to go along with these programs if they believed that they could actually get some accountability in that regard. But let me go back to just sort of the broader cultural implications.
Mm-hmm.
When was it? I mean, was it always the case that in this country anyways, there was a sense that torture was wrong?
It wasn't always the case. There's always been one group of people who were legitimate targets of torture. And I hate to say it, but it's true, and it's African Americans. And that goes back to the very beginning of slavery. It was always okay and, in fact, necessary to torture slaves to get them to work. And then we see the same kind of thing in lynchings in the 20th century. But there was a consensus that most people should not be tortured. And part of what happened, again, around the time of the late 70s is that information about what happened in Vietnam, about the Phoenix program, in which some 30,000 people were tortured. They called it pump and dump. They supposedly pumped them for information and then dumped them into the South China Sea. And when that information began to seep into the U.S., there really was a public revulsion. And so for a good 25, 30 years, there was a consensus that we don't do this. This is wrong. The first break in it that I saw was actually November 5th of 2001, when Jonathan Alter, who is a liberal journalist and historian, wrote a piece that appeared in Newsweek called Time to Think About Torture.
Right.
And do you remember that?
I do remember it. In fact, I have it in my stack here of, of material. It was Jim Rutenberg quoted – actually wrote a piece about it in 2001, November 5. And apparently Alter wrote, in this autumn of anger, even a liberal can find his thoughts turning to torture.
Exactly.
And something to jumpstart the stalled investigation of the greatest crime in American history. There was a lot of other liberals, I think, at that time, too. And even someone, you know, I don't know where Alan Dershowitz fits on that spectrum these days.
Well, he had actually already been talking about torture warrants for a long time, because that's his particular hobby horse.
Right.
That we're going to torture people. They do it in Israel. We should do it here. And if we're going to do it, it should be done decently and in order with a warrant. That's been his. But, you know, he just
It's fascinating that the change in the perspective on torture came from, in one instance, a change in the perspective of the people we were torturing in terms of slaves.
Right.
And then secondarily, in something that was so massive and part of a greater pushback against that the Vietnam War. I'm just, you know, in this new context where we are waging a sort of an ongoing secret war that has very little cost to the United States, at least in terms of your average citizen even being aware of it, frankly. It seems to me that this sense of torture's okay is going to metastasize unless there's something dramatic that takes place, and I just don't see it.
I'm afraid that you may be right about that, and but hope is an important virtue, and I think that although it's hard to see it right now, I also want to point out that sometimes things happen that we don't expect. Nobody really expected the Soviet Union to collapse after 70 years, and very suddenly it fell in on itself. So I'm not going to rule out the possibility that something happens which changes this momentum. But I do think that we need to be doing the kind of work that you're doing, that I'm doing, that other people are doing, to remind people that torture is wrong. And one of the ways we might be able to do that, frankly, because Americans care more about Americans, is to piggyback on a momentum that is growing in this country, which is a kind of revulsion at the mass incarceration that's happening in this country. There's actually a big momentum right now to end solitary confinement and to end the death penalty, and it's moving across states, and it's interesting because it's kind of at cross purposes, if you will, with this other accommodation to torture that we're seeing in the society. But, you know, whoever said we were consistent? And I think that if we can take that, if we can seize that momentum and find a way to say, you know, if we're not going to do this to Americans, we also shouldn't do it to other people, and to move that. It's, you know, I'm sort of a political expediency person. I see kind of the waves that are moving and say, okay, we need to ride this one. So with my concern about torture, I think the wave that's moving at the moment actually has to do with torture in U.S. prisons.
Yes, I think you're right about that. It's one of the few places in society where we see anything that is sort of like trans-ideological in terms of any type of at least policy momentum. Rebecca Gordon, author of Mainstreaming Torture: Ethical Approaches in the Post-9/11 United States. We will link to it at majority.fm. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, folks. Reminder, we are going to actually take a vacation during the holidays into New Year's. I don't know. There's a slight chance I might do like a quick hop on and do something for members on the 31st, but I don't know. May do like a remote deal. I don't know. There's a slight chance I might be in Scottsdale, Arizona, if you can believe it. I know. Don't even ask. With all due respect to people from Scottsdale, Arizona. That said, folks, if you have an idea for a best of, and we're going to fudge it, you know, like we don't take, we're not going to do anything from November, let's say, of 2014. And last year we didn't do anything from November of 2013. So we will probably, you know, when we say like the past year, we're really talking about the last month or two of the year before, too. So if you have any suggestions, they can be interviews, they can be segments. It can be funny interplay. Like if you know of like a good right-wing Mandela segment, tell us, because we can't remember everything. We're not.
A good way to find your favorite segments is to go through the YouTube channel where they're already clipped. That way you don't have to.
That's a good idea. Now, we understand Amber's only just here with us for a couple of days. So we don't have a good accounting of what has taken place in all the shows over the past year. This would be more fun to do if Michael was here.
Yeah.
But you know what? Remind me to say, basically say, like, next week, Amber's not here anymore, so we only have last week as, like, a good way of searching as to what
you
was on the
show. You can use the search function on our website to basically just search
last week
of shows.
And that is it. Although, if you go on the app, and this is one of the best features of the app, I think it's highly underused. That's my guess. You can search all the shows, and it will search not just the title, but what has been written in them. Now, sadly, Michael has been responsible for doing the updates of the shows, but theoretically, so you could go and just search at the top of the page, members side or, you know, freebie, freeloader side. Somehow I stopped calling freebies freeloaders, but I mean, let's be honest. But send us something at majorityreporters@gmail.com. All the other stuff, you know the drill. Become a member, support the program, support the show in any way you can. Tell your friends, et cetera, et cetera. Going to head into the fun half. Got a very fun story about Scott Walker. What else? Oh, also the fun. This interview with George Tenet on 60 Minutes, when you listen to it now, it is stunning.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
Yeah.
We'll play that and more. We'll take your phone calls, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM the show at Majority FM or do it through the app at majorityapp.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. If you're a freeloader and you're leaving us, if you're a member and you're joining us, we'll see you in a second.